Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Thursday, January 26, 2023. On today's episode, we're going to discuss the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film editorial director Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film writer and box office analyst Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
We were gone yesterday. I had some construction happening at my house. I couldn't record. It's still happening. You might hear it in the background, so I apologize in advance. But I'll try to keep the mute on so you don't hear, loud noises. But let's get into it. I guess the first story I wanted to talk about, you wrote up for the site, and it's about the next film from the director of Barbarian. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so one Mr. Zach Krieger, who years ago some of you might have known as a founding member of the Whitest Kids You Know, but is now a very, very, very in-demand filmmaker in Hollywood. Many of you might have seen Barbarian last year, which ended up being my very favorite movie of the year. It ended up being a solid hit. It only cost $4.5 million to make and made $45 million at the box office. It also seemed to be quite the big hit on streaming, and let me tell you why. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Krieger's next movie, which is titled Weapons, was part of a ridiculously fierce bidding war, to the point where studios were trying to get a hold of this before he was willing to take it out. Everyone wanted it. But ultimately, Warner Brothers and New Line Cinema came out on top, it is a sweetheart deal. Krieger is getting an 8-figure deal to write and direct the movie, which is something even incredibly seasoned directors don't necessarily get, but that is not even close to all. He has guaranteed green light, which means the studio has to actually make it. They can't really get out of it. And Krieger is getting final cut, assuming that the test screenings hit a certain threshold. But if they do, he gets final cut. Plus, he has a deal that includes a very favorable back-end deal, and it is guaranteed a theatrical release. So he made one hell of a deal for himself. And the idea here is that should this work out, he would then become kind of a stable filmmaker for New Line, providing genre films for the studio for the foreseeable future.
It's also interesting because you usually don't hear about all those details in the contract his team probably was able to negotiate, but good for him. What do we know about the movie?
There's very little known about the movie right now. THR only had, because Warner Brothers New Line released a very brief press release, but they didn't say much about it, only that filming is probably going to begin later this year. No word on who's going to star or anything, but it is described as a multi and interrelated story horror epic that tonally is in the vein of Magnolia. Whatever the hell that means. So I don't know. It sounds a little complicated. The only thing I can say is that even though everyone was high on him after Barbarian, you got to imagine whatever he pitched in the room must have been amazing. Because for a studio to shell out that kind of money, I mean, what he pitched must have been pretty impressive. So I don't know. I'm really looking forward to this. And it sounds like if they film later this year, we should see this in 2024 at some point. So, that's pretty cool.
Well, Barbarian is one of my favorite films of all time. Magnolia is one of my favorite films of all time. Mentioning that as even in the vaguest sense of what kind of movie this is has me interested. But it being New Line means it has to be a horror movie, right?
More or less. They've typically been a genre label, as people have said before. It's the house that Freddy built, Freddy Krueger. The only other thing I should mention is that, Warner Brothers, New Line is a division of Warner Brothers, but ultimately New Line is Warner Brothers. They control DC, and Krieger has talked quite a bit about that he wrote a DC movie that is Batman adjacent. He hasn't said a lot about it, but he's talking about, he said it, you know, I wrote it, I'm utterly obsessed with it. One day I want to make that. And you know, he's now working with Warner Brothers and New Line. So who knows? They might be like, what else you got? And he might be like, I got this DC movie. God knows. So that's an interesting thing to just maybe note, that he does have a DC movie to pitch and he's now working with the DC folks.
And also, James Gunn seems like the type of guy to maybe want to take a chance on someone like this.
James Gunn seems like the kind of guy that would hear the guy who made Barbarian out, for sure.
Yes. You know, speaking of horror movies, right before we started recording, something came out about the new Children of the Corn movie. This has been in the works for some time.
Yeah, you say new. I was writing about this movie at my old gig, and I've been at Slash Film for almost a year and a half now. There's a Children of the Corn. It's described as a remake, but it seems more like a prequel. Screened in several theaters in October of 2020. Florida, I think. Yeah, it was in Florida. So this movie has been done for 2.5 years, more or less.
And that wasn't like a test screening. That was like a...
No. It was just in one of the newspapers. It was like, hey, it was just released in several theaters at the end of 2020 when virtually, you know, theaters were pretty much closed. So it was like a weird, and then nothing really happened to it. But so now it is directed by Kurt Wimmer. And the RLJE Films and Shudder have partnered for the release. These two have been partnering quite a bit lately. The movie will now hit theaters on March 3rd, and it will have an 18-day theatrical window before it hits digital and on-demand on March 21st, and then it will go to Shudder later. This is, of course, based on the short story of the same name by Stephen King. However, the synopsis for this one, it follows a 12-year-old girl in Nebraska who is possessed by a spirit in a dying cornfield. She recruits the other children in her small town to go on a bloody rampage and kill all the adults and anyone else who opposes her. So this seems like a prequel, more or less, to the original. So, I don't know. It was a very, very odd situation. I get the sense that RLJE and Shudder probably got a nice deal. Probably not a super rich deal. I think that whoever was in control of this probably just wanted to get it off their books. So, you know, we'll see what happens with it. All of the circumstances surrounding it don't dictate that it is a particularly great movie, or it probably would have sold sooner given that it's a Stephen King property, but who knows?
Yeah, we are in the Stephen King-essence right now. Let's talk about, let's move into box office. Steven Spielberg has recently did an interview with Deadline, and he was asked about the theatrical marketplace. And he said, quote, "I think it will come back, but it's coming back slowly, especially for dramas." And he followed that up with, "I think the pandemic really encouraged a lot of audiences, not just middle-aged audiences, but younger, to stay home and watch on the medium screens in their houses," unquote. By the way, I like how he says medium screens. I've never heard that quote, that term before. He says, we have a social need to get to be together in the world. I don't think that that will be stopped by the pandemic. It can be frustrated by the pandemic, but eventually we'll see more adult films doing decent numbers in movie theaters," unquote. Ryan, what do you think of this? I know you are a resident box office analyst. Also, him saying decent numbers doesn't seem like the most ringing endorsement. It seems like it'll get back to kind of what it was before. It sounds like he's saying.
Yeah, well, I think it's a very realistic. I think he's being very realistic about it. Like, he's not, you know, and I think the thing is that, like, he's not wrong. We've already seen, you know, this year, like, And I think the thing is, like, even if you look at something like The Menu, a movie that was, yes, it had like a genre feel to it, but it wasn't like, you know, as out and out of a horror movie, and that did very well. I think like even something like if you look at A Man Called Otto right now, that's doing reasonably well. You know, Missing is doing pretty well. So I think that you're going to see, like, even though these are like thriller type movies, they're still, you know, adult skewing, I think, in some ways. I think what we're already seeing is, like, after the Oscar nominations came out, like, we could talk a little bit more about this in a little bit, but, like, you know, some of these movies are already heading back to theaters. They might make a little bit more money. So, like, you know, we'll see. I think that, like, as I argued at the end of last year, studios cannot abandon these kind of movies yet. They need to kind of bite the bullet for a little while. Hopefully they can maybe break even on some of these while people get used to the idea of going to see these movies in a theater again. And then over time, yeah, they'll probably start to make money again. But, like, you know, but you can't just abandon them or you're losing a huge section of the business. So I think that, you know, I think Spielberg's right, but I don't think we're ever going to get to a point where a movie like, you know, Catch Me If You Can makes $250 million or whatever again. But, you know, yeah, you might get to a point where that movie makes enough in theaters and then, you know, finds its audience over time.
Yeah. You know what's going to save us all, Ryan? MoviePass. MoviePass is coming back. It's opened its beta. We have new pricing, plan details. I know we've talked about MoviePass a lot in the past on this podcast. And, you know, it kind of did open the door to these subscription services in the U.S. at least.
Yeah.
Because it's funny because I feel like 8 years ago I was in Europe and that the subscription movie theater stuff was already like a big thing over there. So it took
was
us
it
a while.
Was it really a big thing over there still? I didn't know that.
Yeah, at least some theater chains and stuff like that. But like it seems so alien to me. No. It was like, how would that work? How do they even pay the distributors? Like, you know, how does, yeah, I did not understand, but I remember being in London at a theater that was doing, they had a subscription service, and I was like, it was just like 7-8 years ago. Anyways, I think MoviePass I think did push things forward. They were a bad company, they were badly run, they had a bad business model, but they're coming back,
boy,
and hopefully hopefully they have a better business model this time around. Ryan, what do we know about this new service?
Well, I thought so. I don't know. Have we talked about, were you a MoviePass guy? Because there was like one glorious summer where MoviePass was the best thing in the world. And
it
then
was
like, and
awesome.
Then it wasn't.
Yeah, I was a MoviePass person. The cool thing is it let me get into the Arclight theaters that were here in Los Angeles, which were like kind of the premium theaters. You know, I love AMC A-List now. I've kind of grown to love that, but AMC is kind of like the fast food of movie. It's like the McDonald's.
Yeah, no, I'm with
theaters.
You. We've talked about this. I don't like AMC. It's my last choice if I'm going to a, like, I would go to Cinemark or Regal before I would go to AMC. Like, it's but it is still though, like, yeah, it is fast food, but you can still, you know, you can't beat what they're offering for something like A-List. I'm just lucky that in Austin I have the Alamo Drafthouse out here, and they have their own season pass thing. So for me, I'm lucky that I can go to these great movie theaters for $20 a month, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the good thing about AMC is like whenever I go, I usually go to one of the AMC Prime or Dolby cinemas that are in the AMC theaters. And I feel like those are like a step above what the normal AMC theaters are. Like, you have the comfy recliners, you have, great presentation and everything like that. Anyways, we're getting sidetracked here. I'm wondering what does MoviePass bring to the table in 2023?
Well, so here's what's going on. So we learned about almost exactly a year ago that MoviePass was coming back in some way, shape, or form, and they several months back announced an open beta where you could sign up for it, and when it became available on your market, you know, they would let you in. Now CEO Stacey Spikes recently released a video, and everyone who was on the beta is now being let in. And I was one of those people, and I'll explain why in a second. So everyone who was on the beta is now let in if they want to be in. And according to an interview with Business Insider, they're looking to sort of launch everywhere this summer again. Now, as you'll recall, as Peter hinted at, their original business model was what one might call stupid. It was for $10 a month, you could go to pretty much any movie theater and see any movie. And what we later came to find out is that MoviePass was not negotiating deals with theaters. They were just paying full price for every single ticket. And in most parts of the country, that's more than $10 per ticket. So and you could do this every day. So they were losing money. I think their idea was that over time that theaters would see how much traffic they were driving and they could negotiate a deal. That didn't work. MoviePass went down in flames. It was incredible. I can't wait for the eventual biopic or Netflix series about it. But now they've rolled out a more reasonable plan. There are four tiers. There is a basic, a standard, a premium, and a pro. And currently, while these prices may change once the new service rolls out wide, it's $10, $20, $30, or $40 a month. The big change here is that they're working on a credits system. So for the $10, the basic plan, you get 34 credits per month, where the ultimate plan or the premium plan comes with 113 credits a month. Those, when you go into the MoviePass app like you used to and you look for your time and your movie, you can see how much credits that movie costs at that time. So that will fluctuate a bit. For like a brand new release at like a premium weekend time is going to be more credits than like a smaller release at a not premium time. So the number of credits it costs for you to use a movie, to see a movie, will fluctuate. That's the biggest change.
I hate this, Ryan. I hate any system. I know like back in the day, like it probably still happens on like Microsoft and Nintendo, like the game systems, you'd put money in and you'd get like credits that were not quite like one-to-one with the dollar amount, and you'd have to like figure out like how much am I spending on this game if I'm gonna buy it, how much am I gonna like,
I
don't understand, like it feels so user unfriendly.
You know, it does, but I couldn't think of a better, because I see their point in that, like, because you know they're not like a specific movie theater, so they're still kind of paying for these tickets. And so, but I think the one thing is that the credits will roll over. You can accumulate credits. So if you have like an odd number left, so you can accumulate up to double what your monthly allotment is. So if you're on the basic plan, you can accumulate up to 68 credits per month or whatever. So, you know, it's, you know, there's that element of it. Look, I think that because all these theaters launched their own services, they had to find a way to make this work. And I think that this could work. The only inconvenient thing now is like for me with the Draft House pass, for example, I can reserve a ticket up to a week in advance for a showing. The problem here is that you still have to be at the theater, at the location, and then you have to open up your app, pick your screening, then you pay for the ticket with your MoviePass card like you used to. So you can't like reserve in advance, which is the big sort of fallback. But, you know, it seems like a more sustainable business model. It seems like something that's reasonable. It seems like something that could be user-friendly enough.
Where is the value here, though? Like, do I get more movies for the amount of money than I would if I just put that money
in? Yeah, you would theoretically, yeah, because, like, especially if you're not going at peak times or whatever, and depending on the types of movies you're seeing, there is some value there, yeah. It's yet to be determined precisely how much value, but you know, it's, as I think, yeah, but I mean, I think, but again, I think it's like, you know, because everyone still needs to get paid, right? Like that was the problem with MoviePass before, is that obviously nobody was getting paid when you were charging $10. I was going to the movies like four or five times a week, you know, when I had MoviePass that one summer, and for my $10 a month, they were losing a ton of money on me. So, you know, I don't know. I think this is still a potentially decent deal for the right kind of moviegoer, but it's certainly not like it was going to be before. And I think the biggest thing is that, yeah, they have to now compete with these other services that exist, you know, to that are quite frankly serving their own interests, because AMC has every motivation to get people to use A-List. The Alamo Drafthouse has every motivation to get people to use their season pass. Regal, I forget what theirs is called. I think it's just Regal Club or something. They have motivation to get people to use that. So why would they support MoviePass? And the answer is they won't.
I don't know. Like AMC A-List, just for example, is $19.95 a month. And I get to see three movies every week. I can see them in IMAX. I can see them in 3D. I can see them in Dolby Cinema. You know, there's no restrictions. It's just like easy. I'm paying $19.95 a month. and I could see up to three movies a week. Do I see three movies a week, Ryan? No. Has there been months that I actually didn't go to the theater? Yes. In that way, it's like a gym membership. Do you know what I mean? You pay for it. You expect to use it. Has there been weeks that I've seen three movies in theater? Yes. It's been days I've seen three movies in theater. Yes. I don't know. I just feel like that's so much. It seems like so much simpler and so much better value from the consumer end than MoviePass. MoviePass feels like, if you're going to see this many movies, then you may as well go through us because you could get some value out of it.
Yeah, totally. But again, it's just one of those things that, you know, like I've argued that anything that could potentially get people back to theaters is a good thing. If people will sign up for this and they do find some value in it, you know, good for them. But yeah, you know, we'll see how it actually goes in practice.
Next up, we're going to talk about the Oscars, but before that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You also wrote this article up on the site, the 2023 Oscar nominees for Best Picture, a box office breakdown. And I thought this was interesting because, you know, in recent years, the Best Picture nominees have been a lot of like smaller films that didn't really do well at the box office, leading them to actually expand the nominations to, you know, 8 to 10 nominations a year, to try to get in, you know, the big, like, you know, bigger movies that might excite people to watch the Oscar ceremonies, to have like kind of some kind of skin in the game of being excited of, you know, who's going to win the Best Picture. This year is interesting because some of these movies have actually made some substantial money.
Yeah, no more. So I did this last year. I did a very similar breakdown of looking at the Best Picture nominees and, you know, let's keep in mind the 2023 Oscars are honoring movies that were released in 2022. The 2022 Oscars were honoring movies that were released in 2021. As you'll recall, in 2021, it was a very streaming heavy year still. That was the recovery year for the box office. So the early half of the year, you know, very few people were going to the movies. Warner Brothers did its Project Popcorn thing where all their movies went to HBO Max and in theaters. The only certifiable blockbuster at all in the field last year was Dune, which made like $400 million. You know, so it was like a mixed, you know, there wasn't like a lot of movies that a lot of people had seen or had a lot of investment in. This year, the big difference is that we literally have two of the highest grossing movies of all time in the Best Picture category, which is Avatar: The Way of Water and Top Gun: Maverick, both of which scored Best Picture nominations. Quite frankly, I am a little surprised that Top Gun got all the way to Best Picture, but I view that as a good thing. Going down the whole list here, we have All Quiet on the Western Front, which is a Netflix release. Banshees of Inisherin, which is a Disney Searchlight Pictures release. Elvis, which is from Warner Brothers. Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is from A24. The Fabelmans, which was Universal Pictures. Tar, which from Universal via Focus Features. Top Gun Maverick, again, which is Paramount. Triangle of Sadness, which is through Neon. And then Women Talking, which was through MGM / United Artists. The lowest grossing of the bunch was Women Talking, which, as of that writing, had only made $1.1 million. All Quiet on the Western Front only got a theatrical qualifying release. It's a Netflix movie. We have no idea how much money it made, probably very little. You have a couple of other huge hits in here in Elvis, which made nearly $300 million worldwide, and interestingly enough, is being re-released in theaters this weekend. Because
Elvis kind of surprised me. I didn't know that it made that much money.
Elvis did really well, and then Everything Everywhere All at Once made $104 million, and is a very, you know, like, the type of people that would tune into the Oscars, there's probably a lot of crossover with people that would actually buy a ticket to that movie.
I feel like that's, you know, like the Parasite of this year. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the underdog going into the Oscars that I feel like a lot of people, especially like film fanatics, are like rooting to win.
Yeah, and even something like Banshees of Inisherin, where that movie made like $30 million for what it is, that's pretty good. You know, so the other thing is that we're already seeing renewed interest in some of these. Tar had been out of theaters for weeks. I can now go see that at the Draft House this weekend because they're bringing it back. So like, I think the upshot here is that because the movie going marketplace is in a better place, I think we're going to see the totals increase for some of these movies for sure. But I do think you have movies that people are actually interested in here. And this could, the important thing is that this could get people to tune into the ceremony, because the last 2 years were by far the lowest ratings that the Oscars have ever faced. And, you know, as I've said many times before, you know, studios are only going to do this because awards are kind of important, and they can event that you can make more money over time, you know, with like an awards type movie. But I mean, if the money's not there and people aren't watching the Oscars, your motivation to make these movies goes down.
Yeah, no, totally. And yeah, I think there's going to be more people watching the Oscars this year just because of those two movies, just because of Top Gun Maverick and Everything Everywhere All at Once. I mean, I guess actually also Avatar. There's a lot of movies that made big money this year. It's actually kind of surprising. I mean, why do you think that is compared to the previous? I mean, obviously, yeah, last year and the year before, we can't really compare because it was,
well, pandemic. That's what I think. I think it was just, yeah, the night and day thing of, you know, 2021 was a recovery year, 2022 also a recovery year, but a much more healthy recovery year. And so I think the types of movies that were released last year, I mean, I just think a lot more movies made money overall, right? You know, something like Triangle of Sadness could not have made $22 million last year. It just wasn't going to happen. You know, so I do think, you know, that's where things are healthier, you know, right now. And so I would be curious to see what the uptick is over the next month and change with some of these movies. Like, I'm curious to see if the Fabelmans can kind of pull it in, because I do think, you know, we've already seen, I think the full Wednesday numbers haven't come in yet, but I'm willing to bet that there was an uptick in some of these movies in the Wednesday box office, you know, compared to what they were before. And then you even have movies like Black Panther, Wakanda Forever that were nominated in some of the smaller categories. Same with the Batman. So you have a lot of reasons for people to tune in. And I think that's interesting.
You know, I know you're a box office numbers guy, but looking at this list of Best Picture nominees, who do you think has the best chance of actually getting the most votes from the Academy?
The most votes are the one that's going to win, because that's not, because it's like a tiered voting system, I believe.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like the number two. That. So we talked about this in the Slack the other day. As I was looking at it, I was like, man, is Netflix going to sneak in here? Because I think like All Quiet on the Western Front is like the safe war movie, right? And so what's going to happen is I think the vote might split between, like, you know, the new hip people might vote for like Everything Everywhere All at Once. The old guard might vote for something like the Fabelmans. And then I feel like Banshees of Inisherin is going to be number two on a lot of people's sheets. And so I think what might happen is the vote might split. And then like your old guard folks could vote enough for All Quiet on the Western Front, where that ends up kind of sneaking in. So that's actually right now, I think that could be what I see happening. So even though that hasn't been talked a lot about as a possibility, I think that's a possibility. I do think there's a shot at the Fabelmans getting it, just for the Spielberg of it all. And then I also do think we could have a Parasite situation where Everything Everywhere All at Once does go the distance.
How much money did it cost to make the Fabelmans? Do you know?
The Fabelmans cost $40 million. So you know, it's very much in the red right now. It is not in the black. But I think over time, you know, with the Oscars coming up, it might see that number increase, that box office number. And then also it's probably doing well on VOD right now. And obviously if it wins Best Picture, then suddenly Universal, even without like the immediate box office returns, is probably much happier about their investment there.
It's still shocking to me that a movie from Steven Spielberg about, you know, basically his life and about making movies is struggling to get over $20 million. Like, to me, the scene, like the parallel of this seems like Almost Famous, which I know was considered a unsuccessful movie when it was released. But like, if you look at how much money that made adjusted for inflation domestically, $55 million that got to. And that's not about Spielberg. I mean, like, no one knew, like, some people knew Cameron Crowe, but not like Spielberg's a household name, I feel like.
I think The Fablemans was actually a tough sell for your general public. Like, even my mom, who loves movies, is not that interested. And, you know, I honestly, even though it's Spielberg, I would have liked to have seen that movie made for a little cheaper. You know, $40 million is a lot for that kind of movie. I think even a few years ago, that's a lot for that kind of movie. There's not like a lot of big set pieces in it. You know what I mean? It's a very like it's a human drama movie. I think if he could have got it to 25, you know, I hate to tell Spielberg to nickel and dime his budgets, but like, you know, he works in the same realities everyone else does. And, you know, like, but even so, again, depending on how it pans out at the Oscars, you know, that kind of will determine Universal whether or not they're ultimately happy with what they did, because I do think they looked at that movie and thought, we've got a real shot at some big awards here, and that does factor in.
Oh, for sure. And you can find Ryan's full article on slashfilm.com. You can find all of the articles we mentioned on today's podcast. Oh, listen to that construction. You hear that? you can find everything on Slash Film. This podcast, you can find at Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to us at peter@slashfilm.com. And rate and read this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.